Right, okay. Good evening, everyone. And thanks for coming along to hear my talk. The title of it is How They Solve the Street Homeless Problem, and then in brackets for a while. So, throughout the pandemic, we've come to expect the government's response to be glaringly inadequate, leading to Britain having suffered worse than many other countries have. But the emergency measures they've put in place to tackle homelessness and rough sleep in particular have been surprisingly generous and effective, and not what some might assume of a Conservative government. So, a lot of what I'll be talking about this evening will be positive, even though this is in the context of the appalling situation of being homeless during a global crisis. There are two main ways which the government has responded to the pandemic in relation to homelessness. These are the Everyone In initiative to temporarily accommodate all people sleeping rough, which I'll discuss shortly, and also the suspension of evictions from rented housing, which I'll cover first. This bit isn't really referred to in the title of the talk, so it's an added extra, but I think it's quite sort of important to mention, as it's also a big aspect of homelessness. So the suspension of evictions from rented housing. I'll start by giving some background information about the rental market. Rented housing falls into two categories. That's social housing, which is where the property is owned by a council or a housing association, and private sector housing, which is where the landlord is an individual or a private company. The last 30 years have seen a decline in the amount of social housing stock, and now more than twice as many households are renting the private sector than in the late 1980s. If a landlord wants to evict a tenant, they have to issue an eviction notice. In England and Wales, a so-called Section 8 notice is used if the household is being accused of breaking the terms of the tenancy agreement, such as by getting into rent arrears. If the tenant is renting in the private sector, then they could receive, as well as or instead of a Section 8 notice, what's called a Section 21 notice. These titles, the section relates to part of the Housing Act. A Section 21 notice is issued when the landlord wants to end the tenancy for their own reasons, such as to renovate the property. When my job role brought me into contact with households receiving eviction notices, I saw perhaps four times as many Section 21 notices as Section 8 ones. There has been talk of abolishing Section 21 notices in England and Wales, which would come as a relief to many private sector tenants who live with the uncertainty that they could be evicted for reasons completely outside their control. The law is different in Scotland, where tenants have more time before they have to leave, but they could still be evicted without having broken the terms of their tenancy. With either kind of eviction in England and Wales, ordinarily 2 months' notice is given before the eviction can proceed through the courts. The court then has to agree the eviction, and that doesn't always happen, and arrange for it to be enforced. A landlord can't do this by themselves. Although this process can often take months before the tenant finally has to leave when the bailiffs visit, the downside is that court costs of several hundred pounds can be charged back to the tenant. So they will be saddled with a hefty bill at a stressful time when they have to find other housing or face homelessness. On the 26th of March, due to the virus situation, the government announced that the 2 month minimum period for Section 8 and 21 notices would be extended to 3 months, and this currently applies until the end of September. Also, courts have restricted the cases that they're dealing with and are due to fully reopen on the 23rd of August, meaning that they haven't been processing new eviction applications from landlords. So, in effect, most evictions have been put on hold through spring and summer. However, many people have seen a reduction in their incomes due to being furloughed from or losing their jobs, meaning that they haven't been able to keep up with rent payments. Towards the end of May, Citizens Advice estimated that around 2.6 million tenants expect to fall behind with their rent because of the effects of coronavirus. The National Residential Landlords Association said that due to the situation, 54% of its members have experienced some combination of rent payment problems or unanticipated periods when properties are empty. So, although many people are currently relatively secure from eviction, this won't last much longer. The number of households threatened with homelessness is likely to sharply rise due to the backlog of evictions and rising rent arrears, leading to even more notices being issued. It could be that more Section 8 notices will be used than Section 21s. Anyone likely to be at risk of eviction in the future would benefit from getting advice and guidance now. The pause in evictions has postponed rather than prevented homelessness for many households. I'll next move on to discuss the measures put in place by the government for those people who are already homeless, in particular rough sleepers. So this will form the bulk of what I'll be covering. The term rough sleeper refers to those who have nowhere at all to sleep, apart from on the streets or otherwise outside. People sleep rough for several main reasons, which I'll go into more detail about later. But in short, some people are not able to pay for accommodation because they're out of work and unable to claim benefits, and these tend to be foreign nationals. Others find it difficult to live in supported accommodation, which is usually intended as a stepping stone between the streets and independent housing, or they don't know how to access these services. Rough sleepers make up only a fraction of those who are homeless, who also comprise the hundreds of thousands of people in various types of temporary accommodation, including staying with friends or family. The official number of people sleeping rough in England peaked in 2017 at 4,751, which was up from 1,768 in 2010, when it was sort of around the lowest in recent years. Last year, the figure was 4,266 in England, with 405 people in Wales. These figures are compiled through local councils arranging for staff to go out at night and count the number of people seen sleeping on the streets. So they provide a snapshot of the number of people sleeping rough on one night rather than the total number, which would change each day as some people find accommodation and others become homeless. It's generally accepted that the official figures are underestimates, as they don't include people sleeping in locations which are too hidden or remote for staff to find them. There's also been the practice in some areas of only counting people who are bedded down when found. So someone sitting upright in a sleeping bag when seen wouldn't be counted, even though it's, you know, fairly obvious that, they'll be bedded down later on. Sometimes rough sleepers are accommodated that night instead of being counted, which helps the person but distorts the statistics. In Scotland, figures are calculated differently, with an estimate of just over 700 people sleeping rough on any one night in 2017. And I think those figures estimated around about 200 of those would be in Glasgow. Presumably others would mostly be concentrated in, you know, Edinburgh and Aberdeen, you know, sort of the larger centres of population. Again, this amount is likely to be lower than the reality, as it comes from people who have made a homeless application with the local authority, which wouldn't include all rough sleepers. In August 2018, the government announced a target to halve the number of people sleeping rough in England by 2022 and end rough sleeping altogether by 2027. So that's quite ambitious. For this, £100 million of additional funding was granted. More funding was then added to this and existing amounts, with £112 million allocated to the Rough Sleeping Initiative in January 2020. And in the following month's budget, a further £643 million over the next 4 years was announced to help street sleepers access accommodation and substance misuse services. And then the coronavirus pandemic hit, which, despite all the turmoil and suffering it has caused, also turned out to be the catalyst to more or less end the need to sleep on the streets, at least for now. On the 26th of March, the government announced the Everyone In initiative, which required local authorities to quickly accommodate all rough sleepers who agreed to it, regardless of their circumstances. This meant that rough sleepers would be able to isolate themselves in line with the lockdown guidance. Homeless people are more likely to have health problems than the general population, and so would be additionally vulnerable if they caught the virus. Previously, some rough sleepers had access to dormitory accommodation in night shelters, but this would be insufficient because of the risk of transmitting the virus to someone only a few feet away. Therefore, dormitory accommodation closed around about the same time. Hostel accommodation would remain open, and although this usually involves single bedrooms, it involves shared bathrooms and catering facilities. So those living in it haven't been able to fully self-isolate, and that situation remains. As hostels and other temporary accommodation provision were already overstretched, new places would have to be found for the thousands of rough sleepers now being brought inside. So hotels have instead been used to accommodate people, paid for directly by councils. Hotels had been used before for some temporary accommodation, and they traditionally tend to be the cheaper end of hotel accommodation, but that's still used. Although a number of sort of decent hotels have been used recently as well. As hotels had otherwise largely had to close during the lockdown, there were many with vacant rooms and owners glad to get money from bookings. And where hotels haven't provided food, this has often been brought in by charities, some of which ran soup kitchens, which had to be closed when the lockdown began. Hotel staff and food donation charities are among the unsung heroes during the pandemic, as they've provided the most basic needs for some of our most vulnerable people. The Everyone In strategy was announced with an extra £3.2 million of funding, but this would soon get swallowed up by the massive cost of booking hotel rooms. Where I work, which is a sort of medium-sized city, we've already spent near enough £750,000 on hotel bookings in just a couple of months. So £3.2 million across England isn't going to go very far. So a further £3.2 billion was found to support councils in England with the coronavirus overall, and some of this would have been directed to homeless services. The Everyone In strategy wasn't immediately fully implemented due to the practicalities of finding temporary accommodation in a hurry and arranging sufficient staffing. For instance, in early April, there were around 200 homeless people staying in Heathrow Airport in London, and they were drawn there because facilities such as public toilets and food outlets had closed elsewhere. In early May, the Rough Sleeping COVID-19 Response Task Force was established to direct the next phase of support. This was headed by Dame Louise Casey, who had become the government's main advisor on homelessness just before the pandemic hit. So she suddenly found herself with an even greater workload than she might have expected. Later in May, the government announced plans to bring forward funding of £160 million to this year to provide 3,300 new homes within the next 12 months. This is part of the commitment to make available 6,000 new homes for rough sleepers over the next 4 years, first announced in the 2020 budget. And it's possible that that number of 6,000 might have been sort of tied in with the number of 4,000 odd established during the rough sleeper counts. On the 24th of June, a further £105 million was announced to pay for interim accommodation and support to extend the Everyone In initiative in England until the end of March 2021, with £20 million of this coming from existing budgets. So, the Everyone In initiative is carrying on for another good few months. To quote the government announcement, this funding will be used to support rough sleepers and those at risk of homelessness into tenancies of their own, including through help with deposits for accommodation and securing thousands of alternative rooms already available and ready for use, such as student accommodation. Homeless services and social housing have been underfunded for many years, and it's taken the current crisis for more money to be found. So, while rough sleepers have been accommodated in hotels, staff have arranged for them to move on to supported accommodation or their own tenancies where possible. Staying in hotels has given many rough sleepers some stability and self-respect, which otherwise would have seemed beyond their reach. One consequence of this is that many of those who had become cynical or dismissive of officialdom have engaged with support services. Rough sleepers often sort of tend to disengage with services that they often sort of don't want assistance. So it's not a case of rough sleepers all wanting accommodation. It's not quite as straightforward as that. And I'll go into some of the reasons for that a bit later on. So while rough sleepers have been accommodated, they've been able to make benefit claims, register with health or substance misuse services, and get ID, which are all steps away from being destitute. The effort so far created an extraordinary opportunity to end rough sleeping, said Louise Casey. And she added, quote, "I'm clear that there can now be no going back to the streets as people begin to move on from the emergency accommodation that has been put in place." End quote. Throughout this time, staff on the front line have been put under even more pressure than before. I'll quote from an interview with Sarah Wall, who's a team leader in a hostel in Birmingham. And this was posted on Unison's website in May. So the quote begins from Sarah Wall. "Everyone's talking about PPE for the NHS and people working in care homes. I've never heard anyone mention other auxiliary services or homeless services," she notes. The quote continues, "None of my team members or anyone in the entrenched rough sleeper team was put on the PPE supply list. You have no idea how much risk we take in face-to-face homeless services. The amount of exhaustion people feel goes unrecognised. I felt like I'm more at risk of exhaustion than COVID-19. And exhaustion could lead to infection. I've got a team where staff are coming in. In another service, there's no staff and they're running on agency workers only because people are all in self-isolation or the vulnerable category as outlined by the government guidelines. The other week, I walked into a complex care service and all of the residents were in the corridor, all wanting support and interaction, and their anxiety levels were quite high. How can we keep safe measures and social distancing in that environment?" And that's the end of the quote. According to figures released on the 24th of June, nearly 15,000 rough sleepers have been accommodated under the Everyone In initiative, and this figure would now have increased. So this is nearly three times as many as the official numbers for people sleeping rough on any one night, emphasising that previous figures were a serious underestimate. The vast majority of these people are men, mostly aged between their 20s and 50s, off the top of my head. Not all of these people would have been sleeping on the streets at the start of the pandemic. Some would have been due to be evicted from temporary accommodation, so wouldn't necessarily have a history of rough sleeping at all, but have been kept in the hotels in order to prevent them having to leave and then sleep rough. Previously, temporary accommodation is sort of time limited for many people, but those other evictions otherwise haven't happened. Some of the people accommodated would have been sofa surfing, i.e. staying with friends or relatives. And then this situation would have become untenable when the lockdown started. So they, you know, would have had to have moved out and without other friends or family to go to, would have rough slept, perhaps not for very long, but you know, would have nowhere else to go. Where I work, we're finding and booking into accommodation maybe 3 or 4 more rough sleepers each week at the moment. And yeah, that's due to continue for the foreseeable future. So yeah, that 15,000, I don't know what the current figures are. That was a month ago, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's nearer 20,000 by now. Nationally, virtually all identified rough sleepers would have been offered temporary accommodation. And those remaining on the streets would either have turned this down for their own reasons, or found it difficult to settle in a hotel, being not used to being inside. So the everyone in strategy has undoubtedly helped to save lives. As mentioned before, homeless people often have underlying health issues and a lifestyle where they're less able to look after themselves. So consequently, the average age at death of a homeless person is only 47 years old, compared to 77 for the wider population. Homeless women, on average, live until they're only 43, whereas overall, women tend to live a bit longer than men. So a homeless person catching the coronavirus would be at greater risk than most other people would be. But thankfully, there's not been a large number of fatalities from the virus among homeless people. As at the 26th of June, there were 16 recorded COVID-19 related deaths of homeless people in England. And although each of these is a tragedy, the figure could have been higher. So because of the pandemic, rough sleeping has more or less been eradicated in Britain, with plans to try and avoid people returning to the streets. How successful will these measures be over the coming months and years? Many of those who have slept rough have been forced into this because they aren't eligible to claim benefits or ordinarily access housing assistance through councils. This group of people, with no recourse to public funds, as it's called, tend to be European nationals who haven't lived or worked in Britain for enough years, and also include failed asylum seekers. In effect, this is discrimination on the grounds of nationality, enforced by legislation. Although, funnily enough, it's never called discrimination in the industry. It's for some reason that word's never used. It's been estimated that around half of rough sleepers in some areas have no recourse to public funds. And where I work, I'd estimate that the figure is around about a third, something like that. The Everyone In strategy has included people with no recourse to public funds, so they've been accommodated in hotels alongside everybody else. Previously, apart from some night shelters and very, very rare placements through social services, they haven't been able to get any temporary accommodation, hence having to sleep rough. But the law isn't being changed to make people with no recourse to public funds eligible for benefits and housing assistance. So although they've been accommodated now, many will have to return to the streets at some point. So bear in mind that's a very sizable number of rough sleepers. Other people sleeping rough are those who are eligible for benefits and housing assistance, but who aren't considered a priority for rehousing. Before the pandemic, if someone was sleeping rough, this didn't give them any particular priority in getting accommodation, either temporarily or in the long term. If someone declared themselves homeless to a local council, then their priority is assessed according to other factors. Sleeping rough doesn't really come into it, funnily enough. So if they have considerable health issues, have recently left the care system, or are part of a household including children or a pregnant woman, then they would get temporary accommodation arranged. A single person is unlikely to be judged a priority by a council and may also be unable to access temporary accommodation directly with a hostel if there isn't enough provision which suits their needs. The majority of people sleeping on the streets would have found themselves in this position, you know, before the emergency measures. The longer someone sleeps rough, the more likely they are to have drifted into a lifestyle which would make it more of a struggle to live independently or even in supported accommodation. They may lack domestic skills such as cooking and budgeting. They may have behavioural issues, or they may have ended up addicted to drugs or alcohol and would therefore would have to want to engage in long-term rehabilitation. So many people sleeping rough struggle with complex issues which impact on their ability to access and manage available accommodation. But as I've said, these complex issues under existing, you know, guidelines, apart from the emergency ones, don't make them a priority for long-term rehousing. Even if someone is keen and ready for their own property, this isn't easy to secure. Whether or not someone gets prioritised for long-term housing with a council or a housing association depends not only on satisfying the priority need criterion, but also on being judged not to have become homeless intentionally. Now, that might seem a strange term, you know, sort of no one sort of intends to become homeless. But what that means is that, an example would be someone who previously got into rent arrears. They could be judged intentionally homeless if they were deemed able to have kept up with their payments. There have been plans to abolish the judgment of being intentionally homeless in England and Wales, and there's now less emphasis on this in Scotland. But there are other hurdles to jump through. There are local connection criteria, which mean that someone who, for example, has only just moved into an area won't get priority on housing waiting lists there. If someone is placed in medium-term supported housing, such as a hostel, then some of these issues don't apply. But if they have rent arrears, which a lot of these people do, then this would still prevent them from being rehoused anyway. So there are several barriers which have to be overcome before someone can access social housing. And of course, you know, these barriers have obviously contributed to the number of people sleeping rough. These barriers have been put in place largely to ration social housing, as there isn't enough for everyone who wants it. And as I mentioned before, the market has shifted more into private sector housing. But of course, there are also difficulties in accessing housing in the private sector, such as needing money for a deposit, which councils can sometimes fund. Having a guarantor, i.e., you know, a relative with, you know, a stable and reasonably high income, which most homeless people wouldn't have. And passing credit checks, which again would be difficult for many homeless people. Even if someone does secure private sector accommodation, as I mentioned near the start of the talk, being in this kind of housing still leaves people vulnerable to eviction through one of those Section 21 notices. It's never been correct to say that people sleep rough because there aren't enough houses, even with the shortage of social housing. In early 2019, it was estimated that there are over 216,000 empty houses in England alone. So that would be enough to accommodate those sleeping rough, as well as others in hostel accommodation or sofa surfing. So the accommodation has been there, but the system has impeded people from using it. Difficulties in accessing accommodation are fundamentally caused by how housing is a commodity. And it can't be anything else in capitalism. Housing is bought and sold or rented from whoever owns it, rather than being available directly so people can live in it. So it ends up being rationed for those on lower incomes and out of reach entirely for those with no recourse to public funds who can't find employment. Draw this to a close, the millions and millions of pounds, billions even, put into homeless services during the pandemic will help many individuals, but they can't change the tenets of capitalism which cause homelessness. The longer-term economic consequences of the pandemic haven't yet been felt, but are bound to include an increase in people losing their homes. While the government's targets to halve rough sleeping by 2022 and eliminate it by 2027 have more or less been met at the moment, the problem will return. Thank you.